This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
This is Primetime Sports for Tuesday, January 11th, 2011. I am Jeff Blair, sitting in for Bob McCowan, who is vacationing. And we'll be back Monday. I'm joined by my co-host, John Shannon, all week. And we're pleased to have you on Rogers Sportsnet, the Fan Radio Network, and Sirius 97. Well, the long-running Hamilton Tiger Cats stadium saga appears to have reached a resolution today with the announcement that the Tiger Cats and the city of Hamilton have agreed on a plan to demolish and rebuild Iverwind Stadium, in return for which the Tiger Cats have agreed to a 20-year lease to stay at Iverwind Stadium. And we're very pleased at this time to be joined by the owner of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Bob Young. Bob, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. I know it's been busy.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, John. No, thank you very much for your interest in the story.
Just very quickly, you went from this news conference. My understanding is you went from this news conference to City Hall to speak with councillors ahead of tomorrow's meeting. Now, I'm not asking you to reveal anything, but what is your sense of the City Council's reaction to this? Because this still does have to pass City Council, does it not?
It does. And City Council have a tough job with it. It's a big investment for Hamilton, and they quite correctly are very focused on making sure that this is in the interests of the taxpayers of Hamilton, but the mayor and every one of us at the Ticats, and I believe most of the citizens of Hamilton believe this is, in fact, the financially responsible solution.
So do we have to wait till tomorrow to find out a final answer, Bob?
You might have to wait till Thursday morning. The council meeting tomorrow is at night.
Okay.
So unless you guys are running a late shift there at the radio station.
We're 24-7, Bob. Don't worry about us.
Well, good. Okay, well then I will tune in to you guys to find out what happened.
So those of us that have spent many a night at Iverwind, how is this going to work, and are you going to have to play somewhere else for a while?
We don't think so, but it's all very speculative because we haven't, and Infrastructure Ontario has not yet had a chance to even think about the plan as to how they would construct it. At the end of our season, which ends roughly mid-November, we have 7 months till the season starts, and we can always go on the road for the first two or three games of the following season, so we can easily get 8 months between seasons. So whether you could build a new south grandstand in exactly 8 months, or whether we would have to knock down the south grandstand, play in, put up temporary bleachers for the season, and then rebuild it the following season, these are all options.
Okay.
There was one fellow in the press conference suggesting, well, maybe we should just play at Sky Dome for a season. Or Rogers Centre, I guess it is these days. And my reaction is, why go to Toronto? Why don't we just go and play in Montreal for the season?
Bob Young, Ticats owner, joins us on the Fan 590. Bob, what has to happen now for this, as far as the whole Pan Am bid is concerned? Where does this dovetail with Pan Am money and with the Pan Am bid?
Okay, well, to be fair to the Ontario government and the Pan Am 2015 organizing committee and Infrastructure Ontario, they've been trying to avoid, sort of appearing to play favorites or appearing to dictate to the citizens of Hamilton where we should build this stadium. So it took us a year to evaluate all the locations and come to the realization that we didn't have the budget to build a 25,000-seat stadium from scratch. And when we came to that realization, and Mayor Bob Bertina and his team at City Hall did a first-class job with senior levels of government establishing precisely how much funding was available, we realized that the only logical and financial responsible thing to do is to knock down Ivor Wynne and build the new stadium, retaining as much of Ivor Wynne's infrastructure as possible. And in particular, for your listeners who have visited Ivor Wynne, it's the north stands that were built in the 70s are in very good shape, and they have about 10,000 seats. So given that at the very outset we had funding for 15,000 seats, all we have to build at Ivor Wynne is a new 15,000-seat stadium, and we have a solution that works within the budget that both Hamilton and Ontario and the Pan Am Games have to work with.
Molson Coors, Primus, and Tim Hortons are providing money for the project. Is there, just to be clear, there's no stake in the team involved in this, correct?
No, there isn't. The Council of Hamilton, in their wisdom, and I do not blame them for this conclusion for a second, have no interest in being in the professional football business.
Right.
So they are more than happy to let foolish, naive tech guys like me take all of that risk. Their job is to build infrastructure for the citizens of Hamilton to watch football and soccer and high school events and, who knows, concerts and other things. And this is, the Ivor Wynne was built in the 1930s as that public forum in Hamilton. And this is our opportunity in Hamilton to build a 21st century community forum, so to speak.
Are you not concerned about the ancillary area? And I guess what I'm talking about is parking and access, Bob. I mean, that became, those were issues that were part of the West Harbor problem, the Confederation Parks issues, the East Mountain. Everything talked about the ability to grow the product and have parking and have access. And has that been accomplished by staying at Ivor Wynne?
I hate good questions. As my wife says, my definition of a good question is one I don't know the answer to. The short answer is this is not the optimal solution. We've been working for the last year on trying to find a true home run solution. Was there some way of building a brand new stadium in a location that had access to major highways and had access to all the public transit that a major sports stadium should have? And the short answer is that we have a combination of we don't have the location that works, and we don't have the budget to build it even if we had a location. So when you look at you know, sort of compromise, this one works. There's no question we're only a couple of blocks from Burlington Street, which is a four-lane limited access arterial road that goes right to the Ivor Wynne district. We have both the GO train and the proposed LRT in Hamilton are supposed to run by the front door of this Civic Stadium neighborhood. So, you know, it's not the perfect location, but we believe it will work for getting the Ticats and the other teams that play in the stadium to financial success, because working with the city, we're going to do better signage on the highways and better signage within the cities than we've had for the last 20 years, and it'll be easier to find. And you know, we're comfortable that this will work. As I say, you know, if we had an extra $100 million, we could do so much better a job.
Yeah, we could too.
If we had an extra $100 million, Bob, we wouldn't be talking to you. I mean,
there we go. Yeah, you and me, we could both go to the Caribbean.
There you go.
Bob Young, the owner of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, joins us. Bob, one of the stories I'm reading on this mentions that the newly revamped stadium will also have enough seats to host Grey Cup games in the future. How would that work? Would that be like temporary, the ability to add temporary seats?
Well, one of the big things that changed from when we started this process in Hamilton is the original request from the Pan Am Games committee was for us to build a track and field stadium.
Right.
And the problem with track and field is it also requires a warm-up track beside the stadium. And the track runs, of course, on the outside of a Canadian Football League field. And so it would require a footprint that would not have worked at the Civic Stadium neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the primary reasons we are looking at a brand new stadium. when we realized that we had both the instructions from senior levels of government to build this within the budget that they had given us and to build it on time, and then we combined that with the fact that they had changed the request to build a premier soccer stadium, we realized a soccer field and a Canadian football field are very, very similar in size. There's mm-hmm. there's like 6 feet difference in width or so.
Right.
The net effect is we can build it there, and it's going to work for the purpose of attracting a 21st century fan and for running many, many more events in the stadium than we'd been able to historically at Ivor Wynne.
How much did Bob Rutina, the newly elected mayor of Hamilton, how much of a role did he play in this? I mean, for people who aren't aware, I mean, he's been a longtime broadcaster. He's worked Tiger Cats games, obviously. He's really, someone who lives in Hamilton. I've associated him with the team for a while. How much did having him in the mayor's seat make a difference, ultimately, to getting it to the point we're at now?
It was essential, because as anyone who's worked in a group of people, I don't care if it's a football team or a business organization or, for that matter, a city council, you need a leader. You need someone who can sit down and work out the best possible deal, and then you sit down with the rest of your team. Well, you do it in three stages. You sit down with your team, figure out what you can afford and what you should be doing. You then get your leader to take the responsibility for seeing what is possible. Then he brings that back to the team, and the team evaluates whether that is the right solution. So without a leader, without a mayor who really listens to the private sector as well as Bob Rutina does, and I've seen this now from various stories across Hamilton, that Bob is just doing a great job of listening to what the businesses in Hamilton need to be successful. And he's getting City Hall focused on helping those businesses be successful. And we're just one beneficiary of this this very collaborative culture that Bertina has brought to City Hall in Hamilton.
I don't want to jinx you, but did you get any sense from the councillors today about their interest in supporting the stadium?
Okay, the short answer is no. The longer answer is they're about as frustrated as everyone associated with this whole process. They feel that they've been given, and to be fair, they have been given incomplete information at many points in this discussion. So they want to see a resolution to this thing one way or the other. Having said that, their hearts are all in the right place. They want to see Hamilton succeed. They want to see the Ticats, and they recognize the economic impact the Ticats have for the city of Hamilton. But you're quite right. I'm not going to go anywhere jinxing it by even pretending to know how they are going to react to Bob's bringing this solution forward to council tomorrow.
Bob, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see what happens at council tomorrow.
Guys, thanks for your interest in the story. Wish us luck, but as I said, I'm grateful to everyone involved for the education I've been given and for the support that the province and the feds and Pan Am 2015 has given us and the patience they've shown us to get to a solution that works for everyone.
Bob, thanks so much.
I'll tell you what, there's a couple of guys on his own staff, Scott Mitchell and Doug Rye, that deserve a lot of credit for being patient on this process as well.
Yeah.
And
yes,
the good news is they have that $6 million scoreboard they don't have to move now.
There you go. Way to go. When we come back, Nick Kyprios. Can't wait.
Oh.
Can't wait. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
We are back. That music can only mean one thing.
Souvlaki for everyone.
I don't know about that. We're back in Primetime Sports. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan, joined by John Shannon, my co-host, and across the way, the very dapper Nick Kyprios. I'll tell you what, the other day, the look in TV was amazing.
With the sweater?
Oh, that was good.
I liked it.
I liked it. Yeah,
I got more grief. I got, grief. but I also got good comments.
Get out of here.
I did.
From who?
No, I think it. You know what? It shows a certain comfort level with oneself. No, I mean that. I thought it looked great.
I thought it was Oliver Twist between...
No.
I know some guys hated it.
Nelson Millard, not a big fan.
But some of the parents on hockey teams for my children, the women liked it more than the guys.
Well, some guys thought
I was fox hunting. what else comments did I get? Oh.
Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Yeah, so,
I thought it looked.
But there you go. There's a plus for me. Hold on.
Jeff Blair liking your fashion is not necessarily a plus.
I'll tell you what.
Doug McClain made it a point to tell me that a blogger liked it, but hated his interruptions, which was good.
I thought it was like the old Monty Python line. And now for something totally different. That's exactly what it was.
It was, you were a thorn.
Well, people, you know, the thing is, people aren't used to different.
No.
Right?
And you know what? It's like baseball. You got to have a changeup. You can't just throw fastballs. You got to have a changeup.
That's why we're putting you on Sportsnet tonight. So that's a changeup for you.
Yeah.
You got to wait for the camera to start before you start talking.
You're good, Nick. That's good. That's good. You should be in management. You could be in management, Nick. And by the way, the big story in hockey today.
Oh, it's a big one too.
Other than all those great 36 All-Stars being named, Stéphane Auger is actually officiating a Vancouver Canucks game tonight on the island. Against the
not quite ready to put him back in Vancouver.
Not yet.
Right. No. Stick him on the other side of the country?
I think the security detail would have to be a little big if he had to go to Rogers Arena. So as a player, did you ever skate on the ice? Because the officials always made it to the ice before the players did. And you'd go out and you'd say, oh my gosh, it's so-and-so.
Yeah, you know, no, I never got to the point where I would sit there and say that this particular official's got it out for me. Maybe there'd be a feel after a course of 3 or 4 months that an official would put your team behind the eight ball every once in a while, but not to the point. I always looked at officials, and you knew there was a different style for every one of them. Mm-hmm. Some things got called, some didn't. Some had a wider gap in between of what you can get away with, what you couldn't. But, you know, they all had personalities. In many different ways, you got to know them. Times you didn't agree with them, but you're never going to win that battle, right? You're never going to win that battle.
And that was in the one referee system that you played.
Yes.
So it's a little different now.
It would be, but I would hope still... The game's still old school enough where you can have a conversation. You could even exchange some unpleasantries. And at the end of the day, I would hope it's still between you and the official and no more. I get the fact that we want to bring the fans in. I get the camera in the penalty box. I get the camera in the dressing room. I even get 24/7. But every fan shouldn't be privileged to... every word that's said between a player and an official, and that goes back to Burroughs.
Sure.
And Stéphane, right? So what was said between them should stay between them.
But that means you're putting a little bit of the onus on Burroughs for all this, because he was the one who blurted out that the guy was going to get me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you really felt like that happened, then you quietly go behind closed doors and you tell your owner, you tell your general manager, you tell your coach, but that stuff remains behind closed doors. You do not go public. Alex Burroughs, no player goes public with a he said, she said scenario through the media.
Was there a guy you played with who could exercise a great deal of influence with referees? I mean, was there...
I can think of one you're playing with.
We wouldn't think of, obvious guy. Was there someone who was just really good at kind of, you know, I mean, you've got catchers and pitchers in baseball who can work an umpire. Were there any guys you played with who could work a referee?
All captains, I think, have the utmost respect from the officials, and it's up for them to, you know, it's gained, and it's up for you to lose it, opposed to the other way around. So... when I was in Washington, there's no doubt that Ron Langway had already come off a couple of Norrises and, you know, state of defense. That was Rod Langway. He could talk to them. And, you know, massive course in New York. I mean, everywhere you went, Gilmore in Toronto, all these guys did have a major influence in terms of at least getting, not to the point where he's going to change a call. I mean, we've never seen it in the history of the game. We've never seen a guy change an official's call. Right,
but he may influence the next one.
But he may slow down the process. Yeah. He may get you to think about something more often, and coaches do that too. But that's the human nature of the game, and that's again something I don't think we ever want to lose in our game.
You know, one of the key conversations I always want to be privy to. There the constants on the ice are the officials and the goaltenders. And you know that some goaltenders and some referees have great conversations. You played with Mike Richter, who, you know, there wasn't some... Mike Richter had more conversations with more people in the history of mankind. He loved to talk.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that Richter had conversations with officials all the time. Or did he?
Yeah. No, they did. And especially in the last, you know, 10, 15 years when we've seen so many elements of the game change...
Right.
Foot in the crease, foot out of the crease, contact, bumps. To this day, it's a continuous saga. How much can a player get away with in front of a
Dwayne Rolison's goaltender? Dwayne Rolison's quite an active,
you know,
conversation.
The king out there over the course of the last 15, 18 years has been Marty.
Right.
Marty Brodeur. And, you know, we can say we can hear anything from any goaltender, but when Marty speaks about it, everybody's just like, oh, you know, stand up and listen. And he, in my estimation, has the greatest influence on any official out there, and for good reason. I mean, arguably the greatest goaltender in the history of the game.
But
I got to tell you this. I got to tell you, like, again, you know, I mentioned to you just before the break, my favorite official, Ronnie Asseltine.
Linesman. The Big Bear.
Big Bear. And just one night, I go out for a nice Italian dinner, right? And I drop my gloves, and I can't remember who I fought, but then here comes Big Bear trying to break it up, and all I can hear is, who had the garlic last night? Who? Listen, is that you, Kipriel? I'm telling you, Kipriel, you eat garlic like that again. I ain't coming in and breaking up any of your fights. And I'm sitting there, and it was just...
The Bear's a good man.
Right out of my pores. Right out of my pores. But it gave me something to think about the night before.
Do you think that there will be any discussion between Burrows and O'Shea tonight before the game? Will one seek the other out, or would that surprise you? I'm just asking. I don't know if before the game,
I would hope, Jeff, that conversation has already happened.
Okay,
I would hope between how long ago has it been now?
They've had an off-season, haven't they?
Okay, yeah. Between, you know, players traveling, between even summertime charity events. Like, we've bumped into all these guys at some point. A simple phone call to say, hey, let's set the record straight here.
I tell you what, if I'm Terry Gregson, I am telling Stéphane Auger, based on the fact that you know, Burrows threw him under the bus.
Right.
I'm saying, don't you say one word to him. Don't you go near him. And you just call the game the way you see fit.
Yeah,
truthfully, that's all I would do. I mean, this is one of those. And remember, the NHL
shouldn't that be
is
a
under,
given, though, Channy. Shouldn't that be a given? But
well, it's not. I mean, it's not in the culture.
I
of the
would
game.
Hope, like, you know, I've hurt guys. Guys have hurt me. We've seen it, and then we've heard about the phone call. You know, months or years after that, nobody knew about. I would hope at some point these two guys got together and just set the record straight. Listen, you thought I said it. I said it. I didn't say it. I'm sorry. Misinterpreted. Whatever the case was, at some point, even if it was to agree to disagree, I would have hoped that they had that type of conversation.
I understand what you're saying. I don't think it's happened.
You think that they've just let it
fester or die? And now, you know,
I mean, we won't know, will we, until
unless one of the two says, we buried the hatchet.
I would hope, too, someone from the league or Terry or somebody would initiate that. I broke Brent Ashton's jaw in
Did
Winnipeg.
Did you tell Connor when you saw him in Buffalo?
No, I did not. I broke his jaw. I felt absolutely awful. And it was, you know, on the advice of my assistant coach, Perpich at the time, to pick up the phone and reach out to him and call him. And, you know, I would have never have even thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have never done it.
But yeah,
But he led me to say, you know, hey, no one's saying that you have to apologize. No one's saying that you're sorry. Just as the right thing to do. Yeah. Just sit there and say, hey, listen, you know what? I hope you're okay.
Yeah, how are you doing? And
what was his reaction? Brent was, nah, you know what? He was bothered by my hit, yeah. You know, and at the time, I'm sure he thought it was a dirty hit. Never got a penalty off of it. Wasn't suspended off of it.
It wasn't televised, that game.
I think you can find it on the YouTube now, Channy.
Okay,
guaranteed.
We got a minute. What is with your Toronto Maple Leafs? Come on now. They win again.
The hottest team in hockey.
It's got to be. I think it's got to be the coaching.
They can't. They only win on the road, though. Is there something to be said for winning on the road with this club?
It's always the mentality that it's you against the world, and it's just an easier game. It is an easier game. I don't care what anybody says. It's an easier game to just feel like you got nothing to prove but to yourself and your teammates. Mm-hmm. And getting away certainly can help, but they're getting good goaltending, they're getting scoring, and that can get you some wins.
They got some goalie dilemmas coming.
Well, yeah. They should just leave Reimer, right, and just keep Giguere on the IR for another few days and just ride it out.
Exactly.
What's so hard about that?
Well, Ron's already said Giguere's playing Thursday.
Well,
maybe
Ron can change his mind.
Yeah, he can re-injure himself.
Ron can change his mind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you'd fool around with it right now, really. If you're the Leafs?
It's just over the course of Belfour and Cujo. I know Andrew Raycroft had a nice run of,
37 wins.
To tie, but, you know, at the end of the day, goaltending has been an issue. So when you got a hot kid, just ride him out. It's not the end of the world.
Yep.
We got to run. Mr. Kiprios, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jeff Blair, John Shannon.
Leaf game's on Sportsnet Ontario tonight.
Leaf game is on Sportsnet Ontario tonight against the San Jose Sharks.
When was the last time they won in San Jose? Ron Wilson won his fifth or sixth game.
And this is, if he wins tonight, it's victory 600.
What do you think the boys in San Jose are saying right now?
Listen, the boys in San Jose are a little worried about themselves, alone the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, they've got some issues there.
Yes, right.
They have a lot of issues. Nick, thanks so much for joining us. Take care. When we come back, Tom Wright, UFC Director of Canadian Operations, will join us in studio. This is Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
We are back on Primetime Sports for Tuesday, January 11th.
You'll get this. I figure by Friday you'll have this down.
No, it's just I'm used to, we got to wait for TV. I'm used to all this stuff. Yeah, I'm not getting it. These guys are in there. You know, they're talking. You're talking. Anyhow. It is. All John Shannon joining Jeff Blair in Primetime Sports. Tom Wright.
Yes, because Tom has never prospered from television. I remember any sport that Tom has worked for has never prospered with TV.
Look at the CFL. Look what they're doing.
I'm being facetious. You've done okay with TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
TV's your friend.
This, by the way, is Tom Wright, the UFC Director of Canadian Operations.
No TV, no UFC.
True enough. No, so, TV's been very good to us.
I mean, I come in here yesterday and I find that there's an MMA card at Casino Rama. And it's like Bob and Mike's MMA. As someone who isn't I wasn't a huge UFC fan, how many different MMA groups are there?
There's a bunch. I don't really know the exact number. All I can tell you is that, from our perspective, when we sat down with the Ontario government, over the last several years, it was all about regulating our sport.
Right.
And getting the sport of mixed martial arts sanctioned. And obviously it benefits us because we're the number one brand of mixed martial arts. We're the number one league in the world. But we're not the only ones. So, you know, I guess there'll be other promoters that will be coming out. And I had never heard of this group that's in that came up. And I was in Vancouver yesterday when I found out. So I can't really tell you much about them.
Knockout Entertainment Canada.
There you go.
What it is.
So you and Ken Ayashi are joined at the hip now?
Well, actually, I'm very much looking forward to working with Ken. I've spent, you know, several times with him, and I'm actually going to sit down with him later on today.
And what kind of concerns would he have that you can address, and more and vice versa? What do you have to tell him that will satisfy what he and the commission will need?
Well, John, his role is to make sure that the event that occurs on April the 30th at the Rogers Centre is fairly contested, that all the health and safety requirements are put in place, that all the fighters have been pre-tested for not only any pre-existing health concerns, so they all have gone through their medicals, but they're all been tested for performance enhancing drugs, which mm-hmm. we have a very, very strict policy at the UFC regarding that. That the referees are properly trained, that the officials and judges are there, that the sport is properly regulated, and that's really what it's all about. It's no different than what the NHL would want to do if they were, you know, before a Leaf Sabres game.
Tom, do you still find and look, and I mean, I made no bones of that. I don't get the whole UFC thing. I give you guys credit for marketing the hell out of it, and you know, do you find that there are, now that you are established in Ontario, or now that you have been sanctioned in Ontario, that the quote unquote philosophical gap has narrowed? In other words, that because you are sanctioned, people are at least sort of willing to look at it now. You know what I mean? As opposed to, oh, those are the guys that are rolling around and kicking the hell out of each other. Has sanctioning kind of given you a little bit of legitimacy with the casual fan, I guess is the easiest way to say it, or is that...
Well, I don't know if I would put it that way, Jeff, but one thing I would tell you is that the sanctioning has allowed our league and the UFC to have a chance to speak to more people on more platforms and have a more general conversation about the sport and its merits, as opposed to, you know, having to defend right. a lot of really, I would call it, you know, ignorance in the true sense of the word, people just not knowing. And so there's a lot of misperceptions about our sport. There's a lot of misunderstanding. And now that it has been sanctioned, and now that we have announced the April the 30th event, you know, people are very interested in it. And casual fans are now starting to actually spend some time to learn about it, to watch our athletes and see how they train, to see how they compete. I mean, just I guess 2-3 weeks ago, George St. Pierre, for the third year in a row, was, you know, Sportsnet's athlete of the year, and he beat out some pretty good competition. And so I think more and more people are having an opportunity to actually step back and take the time to learn about the sport objectively, and that's important.
In your role, and you talked about the Sportsnet athlete of the year, because the one thing I'm always amazed with is the passion of UFC fans. Who's more passionate, Saskatchewan Rough Rider fan or a UFC fan?
Well, you know, John, I was going to interrupt you and tell you that the one thing that I found is that all UFC fans tend to be Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans. but they are. They're, like, it's incredible.
They all wear watermelons in there?
Well, you know what? They're knowledgeable. They really are fanatic.
Oh.
They are passionate. And they really embrace the sport, and that's where I've seen the similarities in terms of these athletes, because our fighters are like CFL players in terms of their accessibility, their approachability.
Right.
These are regular guys that work in the community and love what they do, and the fans really appreciate them for that. But all of our fans are like Rough Rider fans, and frankly, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Tom, for some of us, the fact that it appears as if UFC essentially is, I mean, it's Dana White, and if Dana White likes you, you do well. If Dana White doesn't like you, you don't do well. He tends to be the guy that calls the shot. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, kind of look at that and have an issue with that. What would you say to someone like me who sort of looks at it as a one-man operation and, you know, as I've made the argument, it's a lot like Vince McMahon and WWE. You know, he kind of sets the narrative. He sets the storyline. And what would you say to people like that? Well, and again, you know that I'm not the only one who thinks that.
Yeah,
way.
No, absolutely. But I would tell you that for our sport, I look at Dana White as being our league's commissioner. And frankly, I've met, you know, all, if not most of all the other commissioners of major sports, and I would put Dana up against any of them in terms of how he connects with his fans. He knows his fans better. He is available to his fans better. He is approachable and accessible just like our athletes. And frankly, he has his pulse on the sport better than any other commissioner that I've ever worked with. I disagree in as much as some people have said, you know, it reminds me of, you know, it's going back to the boxing days where, right. where he was sort of larger than the sport. What we're trying to do, and the difference between boxing back in the Don King days mm-hmm. and the UFC with Dana White is that, you know, Dana and Lorenzo Fertitta, our CEO, and the rest of the executive team, including myself here in Canada and our new head of the UFC in Asia, who came from the NBA, we're all about building a brand, a global business, and a global sport. And it's all about that, and that's the approach that Dana takes. Now, you know, he is our sport, and he represents it, I think, really, really well.
That mean we're going to see UFC in China?
Absolutely.
How long?
Oh, geez, certainly probably in towards the end of 2011, if not, you know, 2012 for sure.
So you guys are in negotiations with the Chinese government just like every other sport is?
We opened up our UFC Asia office on September the 1st.
Wow.
And you're going to have a card in Vancouver. You have your second card in Vancouver, correct?
Yeah, that's our hope. I was in Vancouver just last night meeting with the city, and our plans are to come back with another UFC-numbered global event. Hopefully this time, you know, the similar timing that we had last year. Last year it was in June, and we're looking at the same sort of thing. We've got some issues to iron out, but, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting was done last time, and we are very confident we'll be back. We're going to the Acer Arena in Sydney, Australia in February. In August, we're going to have our first fight ever in Brazil. And there are so many markets for our sport to grow into and to mature into that that's one of the things that's fabulously exciting for me.
There are so many huge stadiums in Latin America and Mexico and that as well. When you sit and look at the size of some of those places, mm-hmm. and I've got to think, you know, whatever some of us might think about UFC, people go to watch it. And boy, I mean, you've got some stadiums that are just huge there. If you can put an event in there, you can.
Absolutely. And we've got some great fighters that, you know, are from Brazil. I mean, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is one of the fundamental martial arts that makes up MMA. And we've got some great fighters that are Brazilian. Leonardo Machida, you know, Jose Aldo, all these Latin Americans. Cain Velasquez, our heavyweight champion, is Mexican American. And you know, our sport is huge in Latin America. And we're now going to take it live.
Guys, we got to run. Tom, thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
Thanks,
that is Tom Wright, UFC Director of Canadian Operations. UFC is in Toronto. Looks like they're going back for a second card in Vancouver.
April 30th in Toronto.
There we go, April 30th.
GSP, never mind that. GSP's in town.
For John Shannon and Tom Wright, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks so much for joining us in Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.